A stranger with a gun came upon two teens taking pictures under a rising full moon. But violence is only the beginning of this story.
Sometimes I thought, there are no miracles. Yeah, there are, and this is a big one.
I'm Amy Donaldson, and I've spent my career talking about how lives are undone by violence. The Letter is a podcast about how lives are remade. Follow The Letter at theletterpodcast.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
Inside Sources.
Inside Sources.
America's voice of reason. Boyd Matheson.
On Utah's home for elevated conversation.
Inside Sources on KSL News Radio.
Well, this weekend, the Republican presidential candidates are going to be in Iowa for the most part, participating in the annual Roast and Ride event, opportunity to ride some motorcycles and do some grilling with Senator Joni Ernst and others across the state of Iowa. Of course, they're attempting to boost their presence for that critical early Iowa caucus. Iowa is, of course, important to those all the candidates, but the second tier candidates, so to speak, often have a difficult chance in terms of breaking through. Iowa's a place where they often can. And we want to look in this segment to look at how do we actually see that happening? What does that look like? Many, of course, are focused on the broad polling numbers, which show more of the former president and the current governor of Florida as the top tier. But we know that it's not just the polls, especially at this point in the game. There's some other really crucial factors that will determine if anyone can break through, catch momentum, or even ride a wave all the way into the White House. Michael Warren's a senior editor for The Dispatch, and a great piece talking about how some of these candidates on the Republican side can actually have a strategy to break through. And Michael, thanks for joining us today.
Boyd, thanks so much for having me.
So let's dig into this. Obviously, you have those that are polling at the top, the former president, and the current governor of Florida are up there. But let's get underneath. What are the keys to the strategy for those who are trying to break through and maybe become that potential leading candidate?
Well, you know, Boyd, I talked to a lot of Republican strategists who have been there, who have done this before, and it's still early, but it's still requires, you know, some actual action from these candidates. I call them the also-runnings. They've got quite a busy summer. The next couple of months are going to be crucial for these guys. And I sort of break it down into three different benchmarks that they really have to start trying to meet. The first is obviously fundraising. Mm-hmm. They've got to raise enough money. You know, you've got Donald Trump and Ron DeSantis who have really got enough money to go the distance, and they will have the ability, if they continue to do well, if they continue to poll well, to keep getting those precious fundraising dollars. So if you want to break through and challenge DeSantis and Trump, you've got to raise money. The second thing is the organizing and the pressing the flesh, really, in the early states. You mentioned the Roast and Ride in Iowa. A number of candidates and soon-to-be candidates are going to be there this weekend. New Hampshire is obviously the other state you've got to be at. You've also got to be sort of finding your precinct captains, the people who you're going to rely on, particularly in Iowa, to get people out at those caucuses. And then finally, of course, is prepping for those debates. And the first one, which we expect to be in August in Milwaukee, sponsored by the RNC, you got to sort of build the foundation with those first two and then use that moment, which may just be one moment if you're, you know, polling at less than 1%, that moment in the debate to make an impression on a national audience that will drive how people view you, even in those early states like Iowa and New Hampshire and beyond.
Yeah, and that's so important. It's that it is that moment. It's that tap on the shoulder moment. You don't know when it's coming, but you better be ready and you better be prepared. Opportunity always favors the prepared. And so let's dig into some of these things. And you did such a beautiful job with this in your piece at the Dispatch today. And I encourage people to go check that out. It's where we always go for just solid analysis, great reporting, and it's great writing, which is becoming a lost art in the world today. But in your piece there, let's talk about the fundraising component to it. You mentioned the big dollars that, of course, the former President Trump and Ron DeSantis have right now. Go to that next level of running. What do the dollars and cents look like for those candidates?
Well, you know, Tim Scott, the senator from South Carolina, is in somewhat of a different category than the other second-tier candidates. He ran for office in 2022 for re-election to the Senate. He didn't really have a Democratic opponent that threatened him. He won overwhelmingly, I think something like almost 60% of the vote in South Carolina. And what did he come out with? He came out with $22 million of federal money raised under federal fundraising rules that he can just use in his presidential campaign. So he's got an advantage there. He's also got a super PAC that's being backed by some untold amount of money from Larry Ellison, one of the richest men in the world, co-founder of Oracle. And so he's in a big, maybe a different category, and his team really thinks they have the money to go the distance. After that, it gets a little unclear. You've got Nikki Haley, who's been in the race as a candidate since February. She's raised some money, but maybe not quite enough. It's something a little over $8 million she's got across a couple of committees and her campaign. And she's really, I think that's the candidate we're going to want to watch at the end of June when those second quarter of 2023 reports come out. Is she raising the right amount of money? I saw her actually earlier this week. She was speaking at a Connecticut state party event. I asked her team, well, you know, what's she doing in Connecticut? Not really a early primary state. Of course, she was meeting also with donors in the New York area, in New York and Connecticut. That's something she's going to have to work on. And then beyond that, it's just really a big question. Does Mike Pence have some wealthy benefactors who back a super PAC that can support him in Iowa? What about small dollar donors, you know, getting those internet dollars, essentially, that Democrats and Donald Trump have been very good at getting? That's the kind of thing that you can watch and kind of gauge whether or not there's a groundswell of support for maybe some of these other candidates. Vivek Ramaswamy is one who is leaning into that. So that's the sort of fundraising story I'll be watching.
Yeah, and then let's look just real quickly at kind of the press of the flesh component. You got to get you got to one connect with the people, and then you got to get the right people. You got to get those precinct chairs. You got to get people on the ground in all of those districts and so on. How is that playing out? That's an interesting area. Of course, President Trump was known for the big rallies. Governor DeSantis has had a little less than stellar track record in terms of the meet and greet and grip and grin component to campaigning. Who has the advantages there, especially looking at Iowa, New Hampshire, and South Carolina?
You know, it's an important aspect of it. It is one of those things that's probably necessary, but not sufficient in order to do well. At the end of the day, people in Iowa and New Hampshire have TVs. They have the internet. They're sort of influenced by the things that all the rest of us Americans are influenced by. But at the same time, it is an important part of what these candidates, again, can build on. And this is a question, you know, there was a bit of a kerfuffle about Ron DeSantis kind of snapping at a reporter in New Hampshire earlier this week, who was asking, why aren't you going to take questions from voters? And DeSantis sort of said, I'm standing here right now talking to voters. But there was something a little deeper in that question, which was he hasn't had one of those town hall events, which are a very kind of particular type of event in New Hampshire, that in both parties, primary voters are kind of come to expect candidates to stand up there, take hard questions, get in almost a back and forth. I've seen it over several presidential cycles that I've covered. That's something that DeSantis hasn't committed to yet. He's probably going to have to if he wants to do well at the kind of thing that voters in New Hampshire, very sophisticated, kind of come to expect. Yeah. You also look real quickly at Iowa. The social conservative base there, that's something that people like Tim Scott and Mike Pence are really looking at as do or die. That's their base. They want to perform really well there, and that's going to require being in front of people and being familiar.
Yeah, great insight. And we know that over the next 100 days, there will be a lot of that last component you mentioned, which is kind of the message testing and preparing for a breakthrough moment. And we'll continue to watch that. I think you'll hear a lot of message testing over the summer, all gearing towards, as you mentioned, Michael, that debate in Milwaukee post Labor Day in August, when that or just as we get to Labor Day there towards the end of August, that that'll be the kind of the next step for all of that. Michael Warren, grateful to have you on the program today. Great insight, as always. Senior editor for the Dispatch. We look forward to having you back to continue the conversation as we move this all forward.
Thank you, Boyd.
All right, that's Michael Warren from the Dispatch. And so many things candidates have to do. You got to raise the money. You got to connect with the people. You got to get a message that's going to break through all the noise, and that's the big test. We'll continue to watch it. More Inside Sources coming up next.
Two years ago, Americans watched in horror as a crisis unfolded at the Kabul airport.
There's desperation and anguish.
More than 80,000 Afghans have since arrived in America, but this story is still unfolding. I'm Andreas Martin. In my new podcast, Stranger Becomes Neighbor, we'll find out what happens to these new arrivals in our communities. Who would help our newest neighbors? Follow us at kslpodcast.com, Apple Podcasts, or anywhere else you listen.